As someone who spends my life focused on creating value for others, whether through speaking, writing, or entrepreneurship, finding the perfect gift for loved ones can feel like an impossible task. I always aim to give something that's thoughtful, high quality, and meaningful. But let's be honest, it's not always easy. This year, I found the perfect solution, Quince. Quince allows you to treat your loved ones and yourself to timeless, premium quality gifts at a price that makes sense. As someone who values efficiency and excellence, I was impressed by their approach to creating luxury without the luxury price tag. I've personally been drawn to their Mongolian cashmere sweater. It's a classic, versatile piece that fits right into my lifestyle. And if you're like me and travel a lot, their packable puffer jackets are a game changer. Lightweight, warm, and stylish, they're perfect for anyone on the go this holiday season. Quince is committed to doing the things the right way. They partner only with factories that follow safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. And every piece they create is made with premium fabrics and finishes to give you that luxury feel. Get luxury this holiday season without the luxury price tag. Go to quince.com/playbook for 365-day returns plus free shipping on your order. That's Quince, quince.com/playbook to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/playbook. Welcome to the playbook. This is David Meltzer, and I am totally stoked to have an incredible young entrepreneur. And I've trailed his career probably since it started. And I found out I even knew him before it started. But the incredible Ryan Meyer, he's the co-founder of Shuttle Labs. Welcome to the playbook.
Thank you so much, David. I love to be here.
It's such a pleasure to be here. And it's interesting because the playbook was created to learn the playbook to success. And the vision was always teasing the fact that I didn't want to have 19-year-old life coaches on my show. I wanted to have billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, and entertainers that have paid the dummy tax and have actual situational knowledge and experience in order to facilitate value. I've done over 1,950 of these. And what I've learned over the years is there's certain subject matters, topics, and expertise that people my age or billionaires my age, athletes and entertainers, they couldn't have the same perspective or situational knowledge of. And I thought we'd start there because how many years have you been developing the subject matter expertise that you have that has led you to co-found Shuttle Labs?
Yeah, about 6 years.
So, 6 years.
Yeah, which in crypto, that's a long time.
That's
a
really most, basically half of its life.
Yeah.
And to that end, coming from your perspective, you're sitting with someone who has multiple lifetimes.
Yeah,
sure. And that's not just financially, career-wise. I spent almost as much time in law school that you have in crypto. But to that end, how do you deal with the humility side of knowing that although you are the expert topic and the subject matter expertise in crypto and in blockchain, Web 2 and 3, that there's a lot you don't know. And when guys like me or the genre of mentors that I surround myself with, that we actually do look up to you, but also there has to be some mutual humility that we just both don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm like very transparent in what I do and do not know. And I think like crypto specifically, the space is changing like every week. So I'm happy to admit that I don't know a lot of things. And there's a lot of people that I learn from in crypto specifically. That's why it's always funny. Like people ask me, oh, like what book should I read to get into crypto? And I'm like, don't read books to get into crypto because the books that were written, the ones that were written 2 years ago, they're not, you know, relevant anymore today for the most part. So
it's so interesting that you say that. So speaking of crypto, people do get confused. There's Web 2, Web 3, there's blockchain, but crypto itself is not necessarily the platform, the technology that's going to last. And there's so many different types of ways to make money with crypto or blockchain, Web 2 or 3.
Yeah.
For you, how do you categorize or explain what you do at Shuttle Labs pertaining to Web 2, 3, crypto, or blockchain?
Yeah. So what we do at Shuttle Labs, more or less is, I'll explain at the highest level and we can kind of break it down.
Yeah.
So at the highest level, we orchestrate liquidity. And so I think the one thing that blockchain and crypto is really good for, it's specifically financial in nature. I think DeFi and like creating this global financial system is going to be really important. And I think a lot of Americans specifically like don't really understand that because they don't face a lot of the problems that most of the world faces. So it's like, you know, whenever they're like, oh, why should I care about Bitcoin or Ethereum? It's like, well, you don't need to care. And like that's, we're blessed to not have to care. But a lot of people do care because like they can't go to a bank because their banks are corrupt. And so at the highest level, what we do is we enable kind of that tokenized economy globally. There's kind of like more or less two types of exchanges. There's Coinbase, which everyone's heard of.
The founder of Coinbase is one of your investors.
The CTO, Balaji Srinivasan, yeah. Coinbase is amazing. I think they're an awesome company. I hold a lot of stock in Coinbase. But they're centralized, right? So that means two things more or less. One, they can freeze your funds if they want, which is like, you know.
Which I've had happen.
Yeah, same. and there's that. And then they also choose what you can and cannot buy. So they have to list assets, which is fine. You know, with the different licensings that they have, that you have to do that. And then on the other side, you have decentralized exchanges, which are usually chain agnostic. So the way that I like to explain blockchains, they're like a ledger of record and you can store value on them. And if we compare a blockchain to a city, you have all of these different cities with different resources, just like cities have different populations. And right now, the way to get from city to city is usually driving. And so what we've built kind of is like the first plane to be able to connect all of these different resources between all these different blockchains. So we built like this, yeah, basically the flight for blockchains, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And understanding, though, the capability of blockchain is so important.
Sure.
Two of the capabilities that I like to simplify to my older generation that has always been resistant. So to give you, when I was your age, I worked for one of the first internet companies in 1992.
Amazing.
I was legal research online, Westlaw. We sold in 95 for $3.4 billion. To give you an idea of the value that you have and what you're doing.
That's a lot even back then, too.
That's a lot back then, and it's still a lot today.
Sure,
yeah. But the interesting thing was I sat in front of the Supreme Court of the United States, Justice Scalia, and I had an XT computer running DOS 9600 baud modem, which is a dial-up speed service.
Sure.
You would die if you had to wait as long as I did to get a search.
Oh, yeah.
But we didn't know any better, so it seemed fast to us.
Sure.
And anyway, he told me at that time, Mr. Meltzer, this is all in good, but let's just be honest. Nobody, this is one of the greatest minds in the world, right? Justice Scalia. Nobody will ever do research on a computer. You need books. And when I hear my friends talk about crypto and blockchain, the things that they say are as ignorant and resistant.
Sure.
Even though they're super wise people. These are some of them extremely, you know, educated, intellectual authors, speakers, entrepreneurs, billionaires that will tell me, you know, oh no, the government will never let this happen.
Oh yeah.
Right?
And popular, yeah.
Right, very popular. And I'll say, look, there's two reasons why it's going to work. One is it cuts out the middleman.
Sure.
And they don't have a perspective of the world, a lot of these guys. So they don't know that there's so much fear in the banking system outside the United States.
Yeah.
And there's fear for the rest of the world about our banking system.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Which is another issue.
Yeah.
But so one is the middleman. And so in any transaction that you have today, there's so much waste.
Yeah.
And then two, beyond the authenticity is the fractionalization portion that leverages and gives people more opportunity.
Yeah.
And so that's why I have confidence that this is going to work.
Yeah.
How can we give more people that are resistant, fearful, ignorant in exactly why this is going to work and it's not going away, even if they don't believe this latest run, how can we give them confidence like I gave Justice Scalia confidence that people can do research on a computer?
Yeah. I don't think you can like necessarily force that confidence. I think it just will happen over time as like more countries and more people adopt crypto. And whenever there's like, you know, real life cases where lives are changed in third world countries because of crypto and these types of events, once those take place, which they have to some degree, but once those take place, I think you'll see some shifts. I mean, like with some of our mentors, right? They're like, you know, 60 plus years old, worth billions. And they say the exact, it's so funny you bring that up. They said the exact same thing. They're like, governments will never let this happen. And you know, it's just like, I think the whole ideal idealism of crypto is that it is bigger than a government, which I think is super important as we see.
It's not only bigger, but it's difficult for a government to intrude.
Exactly, yeah. Which is kind of the power, right? I think that's like the, I think whenever the Ukraine-Russia war started and a lot of the payment processors cut off ties to Russia, they started operating under Bitcoin because it's right. Like, who's going to stop them, right? Right?
How can they stop them?
Yeah.
And they can. And it's so interesting because, you know, working with, in America, the ones that the government could intrude on and could stop, they did.
Yeah.
And I think it created more resistance and more insecurity from traditional people and traditional banking executives to say, look, don't do this because it's not going to work.
Yeah.
But now after the election, it's obvious things have changed dramatically. One, why did it change after the election?
Yeah.
Because you know your shit. And two, is there going to be a correction because it moves so quickly?
I think corrections should happen, yeah.
Yeah.
It helps with the longevity of things. In terms of just like why things shifted so much, I think, not to be political, but I think that Trump saw an angle where he could get a lot of support from like the internet community by being pro-Bitcoin, because I spent a lot of time in that community. And I'd say for the most part, nobody was feeling any particular way. They were very anti-Joe Biden just because he was attacking crypto.
Right.
Yeah. And Gary Gensler was kind of his guinea pig and pushing that. And so I think Trump getting elected, he's working with Cynthia Lummis, who's like the senator of Wyoming, working on the Bitcoin Reserve. He's working with, I think the Gary Gensler submitted kind of like a soft with resignation. And the person that he has suggested to potentially replace Gary is the one of the main crypto legislators. So that would be fantastic for our community. And because at the end of the day, I think part of the reason why, you know, everyone always hears like different like levels of scams and things happening, and that like is terrifying. It's also like technology that people don't understand and it's hard to use. But I think like once we can form proper regulation and like, you know, assign that regulation to crypto specifically, I think we'll see like a lot of progress in the United States. Yeah.
As someone who spends my life focused on creating value for others, whether through speaking, writing, or entrepreneurship, finding the perfect gift for loved ones can feel like an impossible task. I always aim to give something that's thoughtful, high quality, and meaningful. But let's be honest, it's not always easy. This year, I found the perfect solution, Quince. Quince allows you to treat your loved ones and yourself to timeless, premium quality gifts at a price that makes sense. As someone who values efficiency and excellence, I was impressed by their approach to creating luxury without the luxury price tag. I've personally been drawn to their Mongolian cashmere sweater. It's a classic, versatile piece that fits right into my lifestyle. And if you're like me and travel a lot, their packable puffer jackets are a game changer. Lightweight, warm, and stylish, they're perfect for anyone on the go this holiday season. Quince is committed to doing the things the right way. They partner only with factories that follow safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, and every piece they create is made with premium fabrics and finishes to give you that luxury feel. Get luxury this holiday season without the luxury price tag. Go to quince.com/playbook for a 365-day returns plus free shipping on your order. That's Quince, quince.com/playbook to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/playbook.
How are the tax implications? Because it is hard for a government to track, intrude, to regulate. Even with regulation, it's very difficult for the government to track revenue and to track capital gains.
Sure.
I think one of the fearful things of the government is they're not going to get their share.
Gotta love it. I think... There's a few ways. I would say right now, especially if you're in America specifically, it's kind of hard to get around like what we call the on-ramp, which is converting US dollars into crypto. Any sort of provider that can do that, like below, I think, like maybe a $200 threshold, you have to KYC. So they kind of know, you know. And I would argue, actually, over time, it's going to be easier to track crypto than it will be like paper dollars. Because like if I have 10 paper dollars and I give it to Jimmy, nobody's tracking that.
Right,
but like there's
sure.
the one like kind of like thesis
that
of
does blockchain. Stop money laundering.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like this ledger of record which the, before this, we built a data infrastructure product in crypto and scaled it to $500,000 a year in like 3 months, which is cool. that specifically, it's like the whole ledger of record was like, you can read exactly what's happening. And as you kind of get KYC and like a lot of these processes kind of drawn out, you'll be able to like follow money. There's like some things, I know the one guy went to prison for like anonymizing transactions.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, par for the course.
All right, let me move and shift to a different thing. You sure. are 25 years old.
Yeah.
You have much more wealth than most 25-year-olds.
Sure, yeah.
And when I was 25 years old, I was much wealthier than most of my friends.
Yeah.
And it caused me a lot of problems because I didn't have a mentor.
Mm.
And so slowly but surely, I lost the humility and the values that my mom taught me. Mm. Even though I was still family-oriented, just like you, you're sure. going on trips with your family.
Yeah.
But I let the money get to my head and my identity was tied to the money that I had.
Hmm.
You're in the money business.
Sure.
Even Shuttle Labs is about money. You make a lot of money. You're worth a lot more than most 25-year-olds. What are you doing today to stay humble? Or do you have mentorships or are you not humble? Or are you just, you know, a normal 25-year-old like me buying Ferraris and Lambos? And
definitely not that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it's like, I would say, well, within crypto specifically, it's hard not to be humble because what they giveth, they taketh away very quickly.
Yeah.
So like I've been through a few cycles now where it's like I've been on top of the world and then I've been like, oh my God, like I just lost so much so quickly. So I've been through two of those.
Yeah.
And so like those were both very humbling. And so whenever you're on those peaks, you feel like a genius, right? And then the drawbacks make you feel like an idiot. So I've had two cycles now where I felt like a complete idiot. I think that's very humbling. And now I'm just
by 25, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the piece. And I have like a lot of really smart people around me. I have like a number of different mentors that have made much more money than 1% of the world. And like they've been through it. And I'm like grateful to be able to text them and ask them questions and things.
They're smarter than me. I never had, never wanted help. I thought I knew it all. I wish kind of I had the early losses like you did.
Definitely helpful. It's smaller amounts, but yeah.
So I've been through several different technology. I was there for Web 1, Web 2, yeah. Web 2.5, and Web 3. And you know, whether it was the internet in its pre-chasm state,
sure.
There was a middleware phase. With XML, and then there was the hardware side of wireless and beyond with what we're doing today. There's always been companies like yours.
Sure.
And in articulating the value or the trajectory, I call it a divine direction,
mm-hmm.
The people who survived and made the most money were the ones who created companies like yours, which I call the picks in the shovels, the picks in the axes.
Sure.
Right? You're
yeah.
building the airplane, the bridge, however you want to define it.
Yeah.
But those companies that survive are few and far between.
Sure.
Because there's a million great ideas. What are some of the capabilities of Shuttle Labs that you feel withstand the test of time? Because we're going to go through, like you said, cycles of crypto still.
Yeah.
But it's the companies that survive. The PayPals of the sure. world are still here.
Yeah.
LinkedIn is still here.
Absolutely.
Even though there's many more thousands of companies that didn't survive. You know, I love looking at Fireside.
Yeah.
Right? Andreessen offered him $1 billion during COVID because the big fad was audio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what are the capabilities that you're looking at such a young age that will survive the ups and the downs and be the picks and the shovels of crypto or blockchain?
Yeah. I think with what we're doing specifically, we're incredibly blessed to be in the position that we're in because like Shuttle Labs as an entity basically manages a front end, which is like, it feels like Coinbase, but it allows you to swap any token on any chain. We're the first people that can allow that in a decentralized and self-custodial.
So the efficiency data. And the yeah. UI is much easier than what exists today on Coinbase.
Exactly. But we're also the core contributors and kind of IP originators of the Genius Bridge protocol as well, which is the underlying infrastructure behind this. So even if like Shuttle Labs and like the front end that we've built, which is like the Coinbase feeling, if that fails, but people can build on top of the infrastructure that we've built, like that allows like these things to exist. I think like we'll be all right. Yeah.
So there's dual capability and value in the company. It's exactly. Not just the UI and the front end.
Yeah.
There's actually a platform below that other companies that may end up being a better UI or a better company.
Exactly. Which if they win, have to, right. Great, because we still make money. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, oftentimes like people will categorize companies into cars or roads. And we're fortunate enough to be at this like, the reason that any of this is possible is because there's a company called Lit Protocol. They built multi-party compute. Which kind of allows for the experience that I described. And so it literally has launched in the last like 4 months, which is why we're blessed enough to be able to like kind of build the car and the road at the same time.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's honestly just like a blessing. Yeah.
And to finish up, you know, there's the revenue side, which you've done a great job of articulating that value and opportunity options, touches a favor, and I think a realistic perspective for such a young guy. But there's always the race. Side of things.
Sure.
And you guys have been able to raise millions of dollars. Yeah. That's not easy when you're young.
Sure.
And, you know, for you, what are some of the lessons that you've learned so far about the raise side of the business? Because there's a lot of sharks in the water in any business, traditional plumbing business to crypto, it doesn't matter. When you're raising money, there's a lot of hidden lessons. What's some of the things that you've learned so far while you're raising your capital?
Yeah. And just for perspective for you as well, like I'm the oldest co-founder. So there's three of us. I'm 25, worse. 24, and then 23.
And how long have you guys known each other?
3 or 4 years. So I dropped out and then they...
Like half your life. It's perfect.
Yeah. No,
so you guys are old friends.
No, exactly. We all work and live together like in our apartment in New York. Engineers come over. It's great.
I'd love to hang out with you guys.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Please, yeah.
I want to take you to my favorite deli, like I said.
I would love that.
Sarge's shout out.
But raising money, yeah, I think there's like a few things. I think the first thing is like raise when you don't need to raise. Investors smell desperation, as you know, especially even whenever it comes to venture capital. If you really need the money, investors are less inclined to give it to you because they, unless they're like predatory and they're like, I can get a great deal out of this guy if I believe in. So I'd say that's like the first piece. The second piece is like, even if you think you have a really big vision, it needs to be bigger. Because like you like are, whenever you're working on an idea, you live in this echo chamber of like, I think this can be the biggest thing in the world. And investors who are getting a lot of deal flow, they're seeing, you know, all these different things. There's a good chance that your idea is not big enough. And so that's like something that we kind of ran into whenever I mentioned the infrastructure business before. It's like, great, we scaled it to $500,000 in 3 months, but how big is that business, right? It's like maybe $2 million a year. It's like, that's cool, but like, that's not what we want. You know, we're 25, like we're trying to hit a home run. And like whenever you talk to investors, they're like, yeah, like this is cool, but like, this isn't going to make us, this isn't going to return the funds.
The guy that tells me he's raising 50,000, I'm like, next.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So that's like the, I think those are the two big lessons. And it's hard. And I know you talk about this a lot. It's a lot of no's.
Lots of no's.
So many no's. Whenever we raised this last round, we received a lot of no's. We were raising as the market kind of pulled back. People weren't deploying as much. There was a few tokens that launched which didn't do very well. So investors were kind of like not holding capital or were holding their capital because they knew it was going to be hard to raise more from LPs. It was a lot of no's, man.
It's so interesting with that perspective because raising money is a different animal than building revenue or building a business.
Absolutely.
And there's always a conflict as well as a complementary nature to both.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you know to always raise money. One of the other things, you know, I love the lessons that I am reiterating with you, like you're either humble or you're about to be, always be raising. But another one that I found challenging. I was a young executive of a multi-billion dollar company.
Sure.
And one of the challenges I had was the hiring, the maintaining employees and the firing of employees. And I still have trouble with that. That's why I outsource so many employees. It's the emotional expense, not the savings of outsourcing that really turns me on.
Yeah.
I just love saving the emotional expense. Just to finish up, how difficult is it at your age to manage people?
I don't think it's been hard. I think our industry is generally young, which I'm grateful for. But also, like, I think if you have certain, I think at the end of the day, there's everyone wants something, whether it be money to learn. As long as you create an environment where people are learning and enjoying the work that they're doing and giving them the autonomy to do that work really well, I don't think like it's that hard based on age specifically.
And since your employees are young, real quick, I know I told you it was the last, but I have to ask, talent wise, empowerment wise, you know, every generation historically has always said the next generation is entitled.
Yeah.
They're lazier. They got it easier. They may have it easier.
Sure.
But I think our bench is deep. Like I meet 25 year olds like you and I want to meet your partners, 24, 23. My daughter's 25 in New York.
Amazing.
And I love to introduce you to her because she's so fired up and so empowered.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about your generation when it comes to being entitled?
I think there's a degree of entitlement for sure. Some people feel it, I think. For me, it's like, I didn't like really come from anything, right? So it's just like, I have to like make this happen, you know? And I'm very like...
Do you see your employees or your friends are entitled?
No, I don't think I would hire somebody that's entitled, to be honest. Yeah. I think some people may portray entitlement from like, you know, really talented engineers. I don't think it's entitlement. I think it's like, they're just really good at what they do and they know their shit. So just let them go do their... do what they know. But it's like they've worked really hard to do that, you know? At least the people that I hang around, I think everyone works really hard, which is why they're my friends. So.
Yeah, well, you had it here. I cannot wait to see the next 50 years of this young entrepreneur. We'll be seeing him on the cover of every magazine or every digital magazine, every single podcast. I'll be bragging about how I was one of the first to get Ryan Meyer when he was 25 years old to discuss the future of crypto and Shuttle Labs. He's an incredible entrepreneur, old soul, humble. I can't wait to do more with him. If you haven't checked out Shuttle Labs or Ryan Meyer, please do so. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.